From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 27th day of August, 2009. Happy anniversary to my wife of 21 years. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's out of Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, President Obama has scheduled a diplomatic trip to China. Agenda items include climate change and energy. USDA is expected to issue a new report on how retailers have been dealing with the mandatory country of origin labeling law. And SDS is said to have affected 75% of the soybean crop in west central Iowa. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And then at the end of this half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Now, September wheat at $4.75, down 3.75 on the afternoon. December futures at $5.03, down 5.10 and a half. And the March soft red at $5.22 and a half, down 3.75. September wheat in Kansas City, where they trade hard red, at $5.08 and a half today, down 2.5 cents. Corn pit now September contract $3.23, 2.5 higher. December at $3.29 and a quarter, up 3. And the March futures at $3.43, 3 cents higher. May contract $3.52 and a quarter, up 3 cents. And July at $3.60, that finished 2.5 cents higher. September soybean futures at $11.14 and a quarter, up 23 and 3 quarters. November beans, though, were down a half at $9.96. January at $9.97 and a half, down a quarter. And the March soybean futures at $9.93 and a half, unchanged for the day. The May at $9.85 and a quarter, unchanged as well. September soybean meal now $3.79, $16 higher. The October down a dime at $3.08.50. September soybean oil at $36.21, 25 cents higher. October at $36.41, down 25. At $36.41 for the afternoon. The August live cattle futures $85.17 and a half, a dime higher for the day. And the October at $87.57 and a half, up 20 cents. August feeders, 30 lower at $99.50. September futures at $98.82 and a half, down 47 and a half. And the October lean hog futures today at $47.90, finished 85 cents lower. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures finished the day at $72.49, a settlement price $1.06 higher. November there at $73.14, 95 cents higher. September ethanol $1.62.07, a penny higher. Natural gas at $2.84, down 7 cents. The RBOB at $2.03.04, 5 pennies and a tenth higher. And September heating oil at $1.86.02, up 1 penny for the day. Propane futures at 93.5 cents, down 3 tenths of a cent. And the gold at $945.50, $1.20 higher on its last trade. The Dow now at 9,593, just about 50 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 78.02 is down 0.64 for the afternoon. And the CRB index today at 256.58. is just about 40 cents on the afternoon. This is a production of Illinois Public Media, and our home station, of course, is WILL AM 580 in Urbana-Champaign.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Quick look at the forecast says should be cloudy, some thunderstorms tonight, a low of 63, the wind from the southeast at 5 to 10 miles an hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Sarah Lukacs in Morris at 815-941-3709. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. We hope you drop by and see us next week at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur. We will have commodity marketing panels just outside the AgriGold tent on West Progress Avenue every 30 minutes from 9 a.m. till noon and then at 1 p.m. And drop by the University of Illinois tent on West Progress Avenue to watch a live broadcast of the closing market report at 1:50 p.m., followed by a commodity marketing panel. Todd Gleason and I look forward to visiting with you next week at the Farm Progress Show.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon. On the line with us today to take a look at what happened in the agricultural markets from the futures in Chicago is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the difference in the nearby contracts for the soybeans. Futures were higher in that nearby contract, but the rest of the marketplace was lower. Why was that the case?
Well, we're still working the tight old crop supply situation and still several weeks away from getting any meaningful new crop inventories into the marketplace here. Export demand remains very strong, so you still have the market still wanting to pull cash soybeans into the pipeline to meet export demand and crush demand.
Is it going to be able to do such? It seems like things will be awfully tight as we head into the harvest season.
Well, so far, the market's able to do that. The market is pulling enough cash inventories in. Now, there's one thing that everybody up north needs to realize is that the Delta beans down in Mississippi and Arkansas are going to be a main feeder of cash inventory into the export market. So those beans normally are harvested right off the combine and they move right on into the export channel. So you're going to have some new crop beans coming into the marketplace here for a few weeks, but they're primarily going to be Delta beans until we can kind of get the combines rolling up here in the northern part of the growing region.
And that should keep a lid, I would think, on the price in Chicago and also probably somewhat on the export market or the river terminals. But interior users might really need beans, I would think.
Well, some of your processing plants are taking downtime, using this as an opportunity to do normal maintenance, yearly maintenance and that kind of stuff after running pretty well full steam all year. So you are seeing some backing off of domestic demand because of that. The tight supplies do give everybody an opportunity to maybe shut down for a couple weeks and do maintenance. But we're not out of beans, and the market never really runs out of beans, so to speak, is because that's the function of price, is to ration those inventories, slow demand a little bit for the next 2 to 3 weeks, and, try to pull those beans into the marketplace.
Tell me about where you see us in the cycles for both the harvest month and maybe the lead option as well.
Well, I think they're both in the same pattern. I mean, it kind of appears that soybeans is following a six-week pattern. We did pull out of a larger 17 to 20-week cycle pattern here about 7-8 weeks ago. It looks like we've had our first six-week cycle low point here with this break that we had here a week or so ago. And now we're in the second phase of that six-week cycle. And basically, it's finding support from ideas or fears that the growing season may come to a quicker end than normal. So, I mean, that's what's got everybody jittery on the soybeans because There is no doubt this bean crop is late. I've been in Ohio, Michigan all week here, and I mean, these guys are really worried about an early end to the growing season because they're further north than we are here in central Illinois. So there is definitely concern, especially when you look at the temperatures that we're seeing here today and what some of these weather forecasters are kind of reading in some of the longer-term maps.
Yeah, the high temperatures over the several next days are not very high, and I suppose that would really cause some problems not only for the soybean crop but for the corn crop. Can you take a look at the lead option there and tell me what you see, and then for the new crop?
Well, basically the corn chart, you could probably, if you look at a lead option chart, primarily the September futures here, you could probably try to read a double bottom or at least a shift in trend to something more sideways. That also kind of shows up in the December corn chart. So it does look like corn futures are trying to trend sideways here, and I think basically what it is what we often get this time of year is everybody's just kind of waiting around for the combines to roll, waiting around to see whether or not USDA's August production number is going to be verified or it's going to have some changes in it. And due to the lateness this year, we're really not going to see much field work or any harvest activity anytime soon. So we may be in a more prolonged period of this sideways here as the market kind of waits and sees what the actual size of this crop really is out here.
So you're calling this potentially a double bottom with the other portion of the bottom back in the late part of last year in December. Is that right? Is that what
no,
I'm saying?
No, I'm wanting to use it on the daily chart. If you look at the daily chart, you look at the late July low, and then we had a real strong rally there in that late July, early August, and then we kind of fell back after the August crop report. And now we've kind of trying to pull out of somewhat of a little double bottom formation. In order to technically confirm it, we have to go on up through that late July high. And at the moment, that looks like a reach given the underlying fundamental picture. But there's enough of outside influences in this marketplace that could any kind of shoe could drop, and you could have a pretty meaningful short covering rally pretty quick in this corn market.
Well, beyond the frost, what would you say the fundamentals might be that could do such a thing?
Well, I think you still have to watch the value of the dollar. I do think the dollar is king, and so far the dollar's been one to kind of stabilize here in the upper 70s. I think there's enough factors as we go down the road economically that that could make that dollar swing either way in one direction. If we go down and check out the lows that we posted here a year ago down in the low 70s, I think that would be a catalyst that would rally crude oil futures. And then that would go along with all commodities, because as the dollar weakens, it's going to take more dollars to buy a bushel of corn or a barrel of oil. And I think, you know, the corn market is going to be very sensitive to crude oil prices. I think that's one of the reasons why the corn market was able to come back and close higher here today. Crude oil prices jumped back higher. So the corn market seems to kind of be on track here following crude oil, or at least tied to it, because with the current ratio between gasoline and ethanol futures, it is encouraging the ethanol producer to grind as much corn as he can grind, and it is encouraging the blenders to blend in that cheaper ethanol into the pump price.
Are you concerned at all that the wheat market will weigh heavily on the corn as it tries to rally?
Well, you have to be somewhat worried about that. There is no doubt that we have an adequate supply of wheat around the U.S., and it's very difficult for us to sell wheat into the export market. Just every time a tender comes up, there's always somebody willing to sell the wheat cheaper than what the U.S. can sell it for. So that is definitely a concern. But, you know, you can probably, as you look down the road, there's things that can happen that that can tighten up the wheat, world wheat inventories. And if you do that, then you begin to kind of help tighten up the corn balance sheet. I mean, the thing that's going to drag corn down or hold corn down from the wheat perspective is that the weak link probably in the supply-demand table on corn is going to be domestic feed usage. I think most people feel that USDA is probably a little high on that. And when you've got wheat prices where they're at, that continues to keep that domestic feed number as somewhat skeptical. So you need to get the wheat market to move higher. So you could probably slow down any kind of wheat feeding that may be being taken place, and that would maybe help us out on the feed consumption number.
Dan, thanks for being with us today.
Very well. Look forward to seeing everybody at the Farm Progress Show next week.
All right. Thanks much. That's Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Thursday afternoon.
Support for Illinois Public Media comes from Syngenta, featuring AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids, designed to give you up to 38 bushels more per acre if you have rootworms, and an average of 3 more even if you don't. More information on Syngenta's AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids is at agrisuretraits.com.
In agricultural news, U.S. President Barack Obama will make his first visit to China in mid-November. The president will also attend the November 14th and 15th Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum in Singapore. On the agenda for those sessions will be the world economy, energy and climate change, and geopolitical issues dealing with North Korea, Iran, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. USDA will likely issue a report around November dealing with how retail establishments have been implementing mandatory country of origin labeling for meat and meat products. USDA is also surveying which cool labels the U.S. meat industry is using. Results from that investigation will be watched closely by Canada, which claims the cool program has negatively affected the number of Canadian cattle and hogs shipped to the United States. Cool and wet conditions this summer have led to an increase in the fungus that causes sudden death syndrome in soybeans in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and Kentucky. SDS is widespread in Iowa, with as much as 75% of the fields infested in the west central part of the largest soybean-producing state. That, according to XB Yang, extension plant pathologist at Iowa State University. Instances of white mold, another fungus, are also on the rise this year. A 7-day Argentina farmers' strike due to begin on Friday will have no immediate impact on global soybean trade, but the action sets the stage for future Argentine market disruptions, which would benefit rival exporters like the U.S. and Brazil. Farm leaders in Argentina, the world's number 3 soybean exporter and top soy meal and soy oil exporter, said on Tuesday that farmers will halt grain and beef sales for a week in protest of government farm policy. The Commerce Department today says that the U.S. economy shrank less than expected in the second quarter, as smaller declines in consumer spending and exports offset record inventory cutbacks. Gross domestic product, which measures total goods and services output within U.S. borders, fell at a 1% annual rate, unchanged from last month's estimate. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can see Dave next week if you'd like at the Farm Progress Show. I'll be there, too. We'll be broadcasting our programs live from the University of Illinois tent. Please drop in and see us on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur. And if you can't get there, can't hear us on the radio station, you know you can always hear us on the website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now up next, you know, for 3 weeks in October, the U.S. Department of Energy will host the Solar Decathlon. It's a competition in which 20 teams of college and university students compete to design, build, and operate the most attractive, effective, and energy-efficient solar-powered house. As you'll hear, the team from the University of Illinois is designing a home with agrarian roots. They call it the Gable House, and right now it's next to the greenhouses on the south end of the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. Soon enough, it'll be moved to Washington, D.C. for the Solar Decathlon. This energy-efficient home of the future is purposely designed with its Midwest roots in mind, from the gable roofline to its barn board exterior, says Mark Taylor from the University of Illinois School of Architecture.
We have barn boards that came from a barn. We've sanded them and repainted them and retreated them. And then we've got a deck that's made from an old grain silo. We took that apart and treated that with linseed oil. So that's the exterior. And then on the interior, we've got a new structural system. It's a product that's only just come to the market. It's made from bamboo, a rapidly renewable resource. And it's a very thin product, but that's essentially a plywood kind of product. It's sandwiched together, and that forms the structural system.
Solid and energy efficient in two ways. The bamboo studs are 9.5 inches deep, plenty of room for insulation, and only 3/4 inch thick, too narrow and too long to conduct heat in or out of the house. And frankly, with a little linseed oil, they're pretty enough to leave open on the porch. That and the gable roofline sounds like a classic Midwest home. Classic, but a bit of a weighted compromise.
I mean, when we opted to go for the gable design, we knew that we were maybe, we could maybe producing half of what the other teams are going to produce, who would use the whole of their footprint of their house to generate power with a flat roof or something that was a one pitch. Because we got the two pitches to the roof, we thought that we may be underproducing, but because our house is so well insulated, we're actually going to probably overproduce by 3 times, and we think that that's going to compete against the other teams. We think the other teams are going to leak energy more than what we're going to preserve.
We'll know more about that in October. That's when the 20 Solar Decathlon teams will move their homes to the National Mall in Washington, D.C. They'll compete in 10 contests with hopes of demonstrating the potential of zero-energy homes. That's a house which produces as much energy from renewable sources, such as the sun and wind, as it consumes. Right now, it looks like the Illinois Gable House will exceed that threshold threefold. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Good luck to the University of Illinois Solar Decathlon team when they make that trip out to Washington, D.C. In just about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
It's the Feast of St. Monica, patron of homemakers and housewives. On this day in agricultural history in 1859, Colonel Edwin L. Drake drilled the first successful oil well in the U.S. near Titusville, Pennsylvania. The drilling hit oil at 69 feet 6 inches when under the derrick floor was seen a dark film floating on the water. In 1874, Karl Borsch was born, a German industrial chemist. He directed the development of the industrial-scale processes for production of ammonia from atmospheric nitrogen. He eventually won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry for devising chemical high-pressure methods, like that which produced ammonia out of nitrogen and hydrogen gases. In 1879, Sir Rowland Hill died, an English educator. He was the inventor of the penny postage system, with the first adhesive postage stamp in 1840. In 1928, the Kellogg-Briand Pact was signed in Paris. It outlawed war and provided for the peaceful settlement of disputes. And in 1998, former U.S. Agriculture Secretary Mike Espy was charged with accepting more than $35,000 in gifts from companies that did business with USDA. He was eventually found innocent, but seven others were found guilty of similar charges. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media on a Thursday afternoon. It's time to check the agricultural weather forecast, and meteorologist Peter Levitt is on the line with us. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It has been a cool day again here.
Yes,
and
it has.
I suspect we've got more of those in the offing, and really it's the lateness of the crop that you might want to look at, I suppose.
Yes, I think that's what we ought to be concentrating on now is the crop. The lateness of the crop and has been compounded, of course, by a late planting in a lot of the Corn Belt, and then the coolest June-July temperatures on record for the combination of the 2 months across much of the Midwest and adjacent areas, and all of that has allowed what we call growing degree days to slip behind normal, and they're running some 200 to 270 growing degree days behind normal, and that's the measure of the amount of total energy the crop has to receive to reach maturity based on the particular variety that's planted. The one thing that's, when you look at the normals, though, that is a little misleading, the normals start the count either on April 1st or May 1st, but this crop got in so late that the crop didn't emerge really until early June, and so you lost a whole month of growing degree days in a month that was actually fairly normal in temperatures. So what that all adds up to is that they're actually further behind what the crop is seeing than the normals, and that is you have to start the count on June 1st, and it's been pretty poor. So, what's in the offing? Well, this next week is going to be a below normal week across much of the Midwest. Temperatures will probably average about 6 to 8 degrees below normal. The coolest day will be Sunday, Monday's coolest days, and then temperatures will moderate a little bit later on. And that'll be similar in an area that extends from about Lake Michigan westward, west-south, westward into southeastern Nebraska, northern Kansas, covers much of the Dakotas, South Dakota anyway, and southern Minnesota. It won't be quite as abnormally cool in North Dakota, but still cold. So you put that all together, and what are the best prospects, the most likely prospects on a climatological basis for what's going to happen? You're going to have a lot of the crop in the northwest and portions of the belt not reaching full maturity by the time the growing season ends, assuming that we get a normal first frost date. It'd be even worse if the first frost came earlier than normal. But on a normal date, we're not going to mature this crop completely. It means it's going to go in with high moisture for the corn. It's going to be tough to dry down. You may have a large crop of ear population out there, but you're not going to get the ear weights by the time it all gets dried out and sent to the processors. You've got worse problems as you go northwest. The beans are well behind in their development in terms of the crop, the number of pods and the pods that are being filled. And a lot of that corn and beans in North Dakota and those areas are getting pretty close to toast as far as we're looking at. So pay attention to these cool temperatures and its impact.
Thanks much. We appreciate you being with us, Pete.
My pleasure.
Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joining us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.